For WKU Public Radio, I'm Emil Moffitt. Abraham Lincoln's place in history is well-defined. He's the great emancipator, the man who preserved the Union. Jefferson Davis's legacy, however, is a bit more complicated. The two men were born within 120 miles of each other in rural parts of Kentucky. Today, the Lincoln birthplace in Hodgenville is a national park featuring a granite memorial rising above rolling green hills. Park Superintendent Bill Justice.
There's four flights of the steps as you head up to the memorial. And they are, in their own way, an invitation to go up and go into the memorial itself.
A replica of the austere log cabin in which Lincoln was born sits inside this ornate structure.
It has a very memorial feel to it. The beautiful pink granite around the edge, the plaster finished fixtures on the walls. It's the florets in the ceiling. Really, really beautiful interior for this memorial.
Meantime, the day we visited the Jefferson Davis Birthplace Memorial in Fairview, there was a living history demonstration complete with cannon fire. A 2-minute elevator ride is required to get to the top of a 351-foot obelisk that pierces the rural Kentucky sky and commemorates the birthplace of the Confederacy's only president. For 4 years, Ron Sidner has been in charge of the Davis State Park.
The whole country, you know, in history has just been taught that he's the president of the Confederacy, and then history doesn't talk about him anymore. However, during the first 6 years of the 19th century, he was one of the most popular statesmen in the country.
One scholar who has spent time considering Jefferson Davis's place in American history is James McPherson.
I started out thinking that Davis stood for the wrong cause in the Civil War, the defense of slavery and the breaking up of the United States. I still think that. He was on the wrong side of history.
McPherson is a professor at Princeton who's written several books about the Civil War, including his latest called Embattled Rebel, Jefferson Davis as Commander-in-Chief.
Once you grant that he believed in what he was doing, he was sincere about what he was doing, one can come to have more understanding, more appreciation, more empathy with the problems he faced.
In the book, McPherson says Davis was rewarded for the confidence he placed in Robert E. Lee.
In May of 1862, Davis appointed Lee as the commander of the Army of Northern Virginia, and of course that was by far the most successful Confederate army, and I suppose the principal reason why the Confederacy was able to hold out as long as it did.
But the relationship between Davis and Lee was the exception rather than the rule. McPherson points to contentious relationships with other generals like Joseph E. Johnston and Pierre G.T. Beauregard.
In part, that was a personality clash. All three of those men, Davis, Johnston, and Beauregard, had strong egos.
One of the challenges faced by the Confederacy was a shortage of food, not only for troops, but for citizens. One passage in the book details the time a riot broke out in Richmond, and Davis himself warned the crowd if it didn't disperse, force would be used. Despite that incident, McPherson disagrees with the notion that Davis was an unpopular president.
I think all of these conflicts between prominent political leaders like Wigfall and Toombs and prominent newspapers like the Charleston Mercury and the Richmond Examiner have given a somewhat false impression of Davis's reputation among the people of the Confederacy. I think that he was stronger among the general population than the impression one would get.
McPherson concludes a Confederate loss in the Civil War was inevitable, no matter who was the president. For WKU Public Radio, I'm Emil Moffitt.